Thank you. Thank you, Rich. Thank you for asking me to be of service. It really is an honor. And thank you for the people who have their camera on. I really do appreciate it. It is tough to pitch to a black screen. So just so you know that. So thank you. Hi, I'm Tim, compulsive overeater. I been back from relapse. Over 16 years of abstinence, and I'm down 106 pounds of this month. And why I say the exact number is because my disease loves vagueness. It loves the dark areas. It loves lack of transparency. It likes vagueness. And I can put the more I eat, the more I want to eat. I think regular people get satisfied. We as compulsive overeaters, has been my experience, the more that I eat, the more I want to eat. So when I went out on relapse, it was 5 pounds. It was 5 pounds. It was 5 pounds. And then it was 105 pounds. So I think it's very important. The bigger miracle is not that I lost the weight. That was never really difficult for me. It that I have been within 5 pounds of my assigned weight for the past 15 plus years. So that's a bigger miracle. My sponsor and I really take it serious in obtaining and maintaining a healthy body weight. That's what I'm here for. That's the goal, losing the weight and then obtaining and maintaining it. So I'll start here with some pictures. Let's see. I did not grow up, sorry, having a little problem here. I did not grow up an obese child. I grew up, here's the one I just never like to share, but it needs to be shared. Let's see. This is probably closest to my heaviest weight here. And so yes, I grew up on a big piece of property. It was not a working farm, but it was a big piece of property. So we constantly had to work. And we always had chores. We always were encouraged to eat really big meals because we might not stop for food, right? We were encouraged to eat big meals. Like I said, we were either working on the farm or I was playing a sport. And I really did not like where we grew up. Even though I had a 2-acre lake to go fishing in every day, I had a horse that I could ride, I had animals that I could play with and do all that stuff. What I wanted was I wanted all of those things without the work. That's really what I wanted. And I wanted to have all that stuff without the hardship. And I guess that's really the way I live my life. I wanted good grades, but I didn't want to study. I wanted to have a great job, but I was unwilling to work hard. And I remember I was about maybe 8, 9 years old. I went to my dad. I'm like, Dad, I really don't like that we live out on this farm. I want to go live in the subdivisions with the kids, so after school they can go. And we wouldn't have all this grass to cut. We wouldn't have all the lake to take care of. We wouldn't have all this stuff we had to do. And I really wanted to move. And he's like, and I told him I told him what I wanted. And he said basically no. Of course, it made complete sense. I didn't understand it at the time, right? But we weren't moving. And at that point, I really think I started to kind of sneak. I started to lie to my parents. I started to do what I wanted to do because I told you what I wanted. I told you what I wanted and I didn't get it. So that kind of affected me. And I could kind of, it was soon after that that I went and asked a girl that I liked in grade school that I wanted to be her boyfriend. And of course, I got the same answer that I got from my dad. No, thank you. And, I rode the bus home. I got home, and nobody ever taught me this, but I got a loaf of bread out, I got the toaster out, and I got the butter out, and I just started this assembly line. And I don't know what happened, but somewhere I just kept eating. I just kept eating, and I felt better, and I just kept eating, and I felt better, and I kept eating. I stopped worrying about the girl. I stopped worrying about the rejection. I stopped worrying about all the things that were going on in my life, and I just ate the whole loaf of bread. And again, I felt better. My mom came home and she was like, "You ate a whole loaf of bread?" And I'm like, "Yeah." And she said, "Well, you have to eat dinner." And I'm like, "Okay." I didn't have any problem eating dinner. And so I ate dinner and what do you call it? Not a problem. I didn't go just gain tons of weight and all that stuff. You know, I just started kind of using food to cope my anxiety. And again, I wasn't taught this, but this is something that I learned on my own. It really kind of kicked into high gear in high school for me. And high school is kind of like when the really good kids in sports continue on, and I wasn't a really good in sports, so I stopped playing. And that's when maybe the first 20 or 30 pounds came on. It was funny, I was just home this weekend and I was looking through all the some old pictures, and that's really kind of when the just maybe 20 or 30 pounds came on. And the two things that I could use to lose weight were one of two things. It was either a girlfriend or a job. Now, again, nobody ever taught me these things, but I thought I had to be thin to get a girlfriend. I wasn't worthy, so if I was thin, I was worthy. And I got the girlfriend, right? And or job. Again, nobody taught me this. I thought I had to be thin to get a job. And so I could cycle up and down. If I wanted to get a new job or a new girlfriend, I would cycle up and down. And this kind of repeated itself. And it was slowly starting to escalate. It was 20 to 30 pounds in high school, 30 to 40 pounds in college, 50 pounds after college, you know. And it just started to keep creeping up and creeping up. Now, all the while, I learned to use alcohol. Alcohol for me was kind of like a great diet pill because it did for me what food did for me. It took the edge off my life, right? I felt like a good person. I felt like I was worthy. It made me feel a different way. Now, when I was in my mid-20s, alcohol was removed. I stopped drinking completely. But all of a sudden, after that, food came in and I couldn't stop eating. So for me, the way I read the big book is we cross over that line. We cross over that line where even all the willpower, all the knowledge, even the fear couldn't keep me in check anymore. And I just started to eat uncontrollably in my mid to late 20s. And I just couldn't ca I could it didn't matter if I wanted a girlfriend or a better job. I just started eating. And what I did do is I started exercising and I ran a marathon. I still to this day have never run a 5K. I've never run a 5K, but I've ran marathons and I've done the Ironman triathlon. And I was even looking into climbing Mount Everest. I was even looking because I knew if I stopped, because I knew there was something about my experience in my 20s with food where I knew I had an issue with food. I wasn't aware of what it was, but I knew there was an issue. And so I did a marathon and then I escalated to an Ironman triathlon. And then I was literally looking into climbing Mount Everest because I knew if I stopped moving, I would be able to eat more than I could ever, than I could ever. If I was sitting still, I was going to gain weight back. And again, I wasn't aware of this, but within 2 months of doing the Ironman, I pulled a Geographic and moved all the way across the country. I sold the company that I owned and I moved all the way across the country to start my life over. I think that's we as addicts love to start over. We love to tear apart our lives. We love to rip them apart to start over because there is nothing like starting life over because it's new and exciting and all that stuff. And so that's what I did. I had a company making money, all that stuff. And I'm like, ah, this is it. I'm leaving town. So I moved all the way across country, started over. And my godfather, who unfortunately died from the disease of, he was a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, but he could not get this thing. He could not get this. And in his 60s, he had to go into a nursing home and they had to continue to amputate pieces and pieces and pieces until he died. Yeah. I mean, that's what sugar did to him. A sober member knew what the 12 steps were. He knew where the meetings were. He did not surrender to this disease. He surrendered. He was a people from AA showed up at his funeral, spoke eloquently about his sobriety and time in the service in AA, but he never could get it in this program. But he pulled me aside, you know, before I moved out, and he goes, "Tim, I think you're going to do a great job." He goes, "But at some point in your life, you're going to have to stop running because Tim is going to show up and meet Tim." And I'm like, what is he talking about? I'm like, I've already met Tim. I know Tim. I like Tim. I'm good with Tim. And so whatever. I moved out to California And guess what? About a year and a half into living in California, the real Tim showed up because the location wasn't new anymore, the girls weren't new anymore, and the job wasn't new anymore. And all of a sudden, I'm starting to take foods back that I had been avoiding. And I try to exercise it off, and I can't exercise it off, and I'm skipping exercising runs, and it's just, I can't keep it up anymore. And during this time, I met a guy. I don't know if any, I mean, you guys are from the foothill. He's basically in Studio City, or used to be. White Flag Walter. He would bring in-person meetings, he'd bring a surrender flag. He'd bring a white flag in when he'd share. And I met him during that time, and he's about 6'2" and he's 180 pounds when he's abstinent. And he was 180 pounds, and he's like, "Yeah, we're the same." And I'm like, "What do you mean? I'm 5'8" on my way up to 280 pounds." And he shows me a picture of him riding on a mountain bike, and he's sitting there about 300 pounds on this, spilling over this mountain bike. And I'm like, "Well, what did you do?" And I'm just looking for the diet. I'm looking for the diet. And he goes, "I went to Overeaters Anonymous." And again, since my godfather was in AA, I thought I knew about 12-step programs. And I'm like, I don't want a self-help. I don't want a help for it. I just want the diet." And he goes, "Tim, I couldn't stick to a diet until I had a spiritual awakening." And I'm like, "Yeah, whatever." So I go back and I ran what turns out to be my final marathon. And I tricked my brothers and sisters into running it with me. They're all there. They're encouraging me, and we're encouraging each other. I've got a very loving family. We've got our issues for sure, but we get along pretty well. And my best thinking was the night before the marathon to go to get my own room, get in the room, order a pizza, and what I promised myself, I was going to eat one piece, and it turned into the whole pizza. And the marathon did not turn out well. The marathon did not turn out well, and I did something I've never done before. I bought a diet book in the Chicago airport. I read it on the way home. I was going to have my first Monday morning. I got the home Sunday night. I bought all the foods I was supposed to buy. By Monday at lunchtime, I am binging uncontrollably. I can't even put together 6 hours. Now, one of my character defects is I'm a quitter. When the going gets tough, Tim leaves town. That's what he does. I don't stick to it. I don't have grit. I don't have all that stuff that they talk about. I quit. And so now in the material world, that does not work out really well. But in the spiritual world, it is actually an asset because it took me 6 hours and two meals to figure out I was screwed. To figure out that I need help. What did I do? I called White Flag Walter, and I said, "Walter, I'm binging. I can't stop." And he goes, "Oh, let's go to a meeting." Now, thank God, this was back in the early 2000s. And guess how many meetings there were in the San Fernando Valley? Guess how many meetings there were a week? There were anywhere from 135 to 150 in-person meetings a week, just 20 years ago. Just 20 years ago. And so we went right to a meeting, and I hated the meeting. It sucked. It was terrible. It was just people whining. And again, it probably was me. I was a newcomer. It was probably me. It was a great meeting, but I didn't like it. But they go, okay, let's go out to fellowship. So we went out to coffee afterwards, and I really liked the fellowship. It was just a couple of us reasoning things out. We were talking it out. And I was like, "I like this." And I didn't ask, but I felt, I had to go to the meetings to get to the fellowship. So I was like, "Okay, I'll go to the meet." I started going to the meetings so I could go to the fellowship. And I didn't like the meetings, and then I started liking the meetings, and then I got abstinent, and I started liking abstinence, and I was like, "Oh, this is great." And I dropped back down to my high school wrestling weight, and it was awesome. I loved Overeaters Anonymous. I started sponsoring people. I worked through the steps right out of the 12 and 12, made my amends, all that stuff. Everything's going on really well. Now, that lasted about a year. And I think it's so very important because not only figuring out that you belong here and the disease you're actually dealing with is a big issue, but actually learning how to stay here is the second piece of business. And I think we as overeaters don't do a really good job of explaining what you have to do to stick around, and what you have to do to surrender, and what you have to do to stay are two big areas where we fall short. And so I did made my amends, and what I did is I started to drift because the meetings were no longer exciting. the what do you call it? I did my steps. So what am I supposed to do? I'm continuing with my inventory. I'm praying and meditating, and I am sponsoring people, right? But the meetings are starting to drop off, and the fellowship's starting to drop off because the girl that I met turned into fiance, the job turned into the career, and I just didn't have the time to get to as many meetings. And so I start to drift, and on the right day at the right time, and I love to do this because it's so very subtle that you and I sitting here would never believe that the disease convinced me that eating a donut was the best way to get back into program. And I want to explain that to you. I can look at all the looks in your face and you're like, that doesn't make sense. But when the disease hits you at the right day at the right time, these were some shitty little terrible little donuts. They weren't even good donuts. They weren't even fresh donuts. They were the box donuts, right? That had been sitting on a grocery store shelf for months. And they were there, and the disease and my recovery worked perfect for about 15 minutes. I said, no. I'm like, no, I can't eat those donuts. That would absolutely break my abstinence if I ate those donuts. And I recoiled. I walked away from the donuts. But then my mind started thinking. My mind started thinking. Now I'm just detached. Now I'm not making as many phone calls. I'm not going to as many meetings. I'm not really in the middle of the herd. I'm starting to move to the outside of the herd. And the disease says to me, he goes, Tim, I just want you to hear me out. I just want you to hear. I just don't interrupt me. Just hear the whole plan out. Now we're going to eat one donut. I know that sounds like a crazy idea, but it's just going to be one donut. And if you have this one donut, what you will do is you will for sure break your abstinence. Now you've gained about 15 pounds. That's not bad. That's not bad. You eat this one donut and you're maybe just technically abstinent. You're not really sure. You haven't been really talking to your sponsor that much lately. So you're not even sure if you're actually abstinent at this point. But if you eat this donut, you will for sure break your abstinence. You will for sure. And then guess what? Tomorrow morning, you can pick any one of those 130 meetings to go to and say, I need help. So it'll be one donut and it'll be one day and you'll only have gained 15 pounds and it will be awesome. And I was like, oh my God. That makes complete sense to me. In my disease state, in a highly stressed situation, I think, well my God, I really have just been technically abstinent for the last couple months. And I've gained a little bit of weight. And then it was that one donut, and I took that one donut. And you could have put me on a lie detector test, and I thought for sure it was going to be one donut. And that one donut turned into all the donuts. I ate every one of those donuts. And I remember the guy, there was a guy knew that I didn't eat donuts. There was a guy knew that I was in Overeaters Anonymous and I wasn't supposed to be eating those. And he looked at me and he goes, you're eating donuts? And I'm like, I'm just shoving them in. And I'm like, I am today. And then he just kind of backed off. And I ate all those donuts, and I don't remember if I ate anything else. But what I do remember is that next morning when I was supposed to go in and start my time over, I was unwilling to go and humble myself and say I need help. Because guess what? The next thought that came in the next morning. Now, Tim, I just want you to hear me out again. You're going to lose that 15 pounds, and then you're going to go back. And then tell them how you did it. You're going to lose your weight, and then you're going to go back and tell those idiots that are going to meetings and being of service to one another how you did it on your own. And that turned into a 5-year relapse, 115, 120-pound weight gain. So what was going to be one donut and one day with just enough not meetings, with just enough not phone calls, with just enough not conscious contact, all of a sudden, the right excuse on the right day cost me 5 years of my life. And I had to gain 120 pounds. Now, my wife, God bless her, she married me when I was on my way up, right? I don't, she loves me. She really is a good woman, but I don't know if she has another relapse in her. I don't know, because the brand of nasty that comes out of Tim when he's eating, because I need to eat. Right? I am a slave to food when I am eating. It is not choice. I am eating no matter what. Not I don't eat no matter what. I eat no matter what. And if you get in my way, I will remove you. And so the vigor and the veracity that I go after the program today is because I've bet my life. I've bet my life on the 12 steps, Overeaters Anonymous, and the Fellowship of Overeaters Anonymous working. Because the life that I live today is dependent upon my conscious contact, and I need the 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous, and I need you. Because there are going to be times where I don't connect with God directly. There's going to be times where God has disappeared, and it's not God, it's Tim. I can't see the true from the false, and I need you to walk me to that next rung in my ladder. And I'm here to do the same thing for you. Because that's the only way we can get out of the darkness in this disease. Because it gets really dark and it gets really isolating and it gets really lonely and we don't even see it. And we don't even see that where we have gotten. It was amazing how when I look back at those pictures, I'm like, when I was in it, I never thought I was that fat. I never believed I was that fat. Because I could delude myself into thinking that I would never get that big, and I got that big, and I got that isolated, and I got that lonely, and I got to be that wild animal that was I just needed to eat. And so, for me, the program is in 10, 11, and 12, continuing seeking and caring. I must continue to inventory and set things right as they go along. I must seek my higher power's will for me in 11, and I must continue to carry this to practice these principles in all my affairs, not just with my sponsorship, not just with my fellows, but with my wife, with my family afterwards, with my bosses, and with you. So thank you very much for giving me an opportunity, and really I appreciate the people that turned on their camera. The feedback is so important. Thank you.